I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? Podcast like it's 1999.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it?
1999.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I am your host, Phil Iscove, and with me today is past, present, and future guest, I'm sure, Emmy Potter, writer, actor. She wrote for Bright Wall, Dark Room, and Consequence of Sound. Today, we are going to talk about episode 214, The Fuck Buddy, although there's some versions of it that have it under a different title because of, I don't know, people being stupid, calling it The Sex Buddy. Not as good a title. So we're talking about The Fuck Buddy today. But before we do that, Emmy, I'd like to rewind to 1999. Did you watch this in 99? I'm assuming not.
Oh, God, no. I was, though I was a precocious child, I would have been like 11 years old and we did not have HBO in my house. And there's no way even though I got to watch a lot of R-rated things, there's no way I would have watched this. So I probably saw this at some point in, I don't know, when I was in high school or college and I started catching reruns somewhere and then.
So early 2000s, something like that. Yeah.
Eventually I would have watched it all uncut and everything, but not in 1999. Certainly not. My parents are not that liberal.
Did you feel like, I mean, it does, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously I've had a bunch of different people on and each of them have sort of their different way of remembering it. Do you remember sort of the impression that it made on you at the time that you saw it? Do you remember it being sort of this moment or, because it's a groundbreaking show. It's a pretty scandalous show to a certain degree. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I was always so. Wasn't watching stuff. I mentioned this in the other episode we did that, like, I haven't watched any of Game of Thrones, but because I'm so plugged into this world, it's like through cultural osmosis I know a lot. I remember in high school when Sex and the City would have been wrapping up, that I remember like sitting in, I don't know, it was like I think I was in like a sociology class or something, and I remember one of my girlfriends talking about like the finale as it was airing. And even then I still knew, I was like, oh, you know, is she going to choose Big? Is she going to choose Petrovsky? Like, I was still invested in a way. But I do think when I finally started actually watching episodes, I was like, hey, this is like, it is, it's very, you know, quippy and the writing is funny and frank. And I think having grown up in the Midwest in a Protestant family, you know, it is like a real lesson in a lot of stuff that like I was probably not super aware of. I was talking to my boyfriend about this over the weekend, and we were sheltered children, but I was like, yeah, I feel like I actually did learn a lot about sex and relationship stuff from Sex and the City, along with a bunch of other things. But it did feel like it was very frank.
I think part of it too, you know, is it takes the piss out of it a little bit too, which I think is really important. I mean, I think that I certainly don't want to project on your family or your upbringing, but you know, I think that this country, and by this country I mean America, has its hangups with sex, perhaps more so than some countries and less so than some countries, depending on sort of the spectrum. I think they fall somewhere in the middle. This is a country that's sort of born on some very Christian faith kind of things. So I can understand why a show like this that is able to find the humor and the heart in letting your freak flag fly and having fun with sex and loving your body and all of these very proactive, very positive messages, I think, for the most part. I think that's a pretty great thing, but I can also understand how that must have been kind of crazy too to some people, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I think for sure it demystifies a lot of stuff and makes it whether it's like kinks or what it various things, whatever people are into, it demystifies a lot of that in both good and bad ways, because we have so much more information now and people are way more willing to talk about things online and everywhere else. But I do think that that's got people to realize that like women are talking about this and that like more so than I think men think we do, and that women are often much more frank about things that are like going on and health issues. And like my girlfriend group texts, like, you know, we've texted each other all kinds of crazy things because it's like, I have a question about this. Have you tried that? Have you done this? Like, because you just need somebody to like reaffirm, you know, or to like give you answers because you probably didn't get it at home, you know.
But wouldn't you also, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, and I would also sort of piggyback on it and say that it's also the reason why men were so threatened by this show. I think that, you know, I personally wasn't. I'm a big fan of the show. I owned all the box sets. I enjoyed the fact that these women were not just talking about these things, but they were talking about it in a funny and heartfelt, genuine way for the most part. But I could also see why this show, you know, might not be fun. I mean, it makes me think about, we did an episode for our 1989 Patreon on When Harry Met Sally. And Rob Reiner was talking about how he did an early screening of it. And in the fake orgasm scene, the women were howling and the men were silent. That speaks volumes to the fact that some men can't handle, you know, the what this show is saying about them, you know what I mean? And their inabilities, not necessarily inabilities in the bedroom, but just inabilities in dating and what it means to, that it's a two-way street, I guess is the thing. And a lot of men, I assume generations upon generations of men, are under this misconception that it's not. And it's, you know, that's a problem. But I would say that this is an interesting episode in the sense that it's about sort of this notion of a fuck buddy, I guess, this notion of a person who is, and it, I mean, a genderless notion to a certain degree of people from both sexes that have friends with benefits, people that they're go-tos if they're not in a relationship, hopefully, and are just looking for someone, you know, for casual sex. Which feels like something that I'm assuming existed far before the 90s, but didn't really come into the nomenclature until then. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think like now it's so like ubiquitous and everyone knows what it is, but I'm not sure that there was like a codified term for it prior to the 90s, prior to kind of Sex and the City. I think it was probably just like, you know, in the 70s, they were probably just like, oh, it's my lover, Alan, or who.
That was like Sex and the City thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like, you used that term. That was like the catch all for everything. And there, you know, but I'm sure that it's not like, I'm not dumb enough to think that people weren't doing this for a long time. Right. But it definitely doesn't seem like this term sort of existed prior to Sex and the City. And now everyone uses it, whether it's friends with benefits or they just say my fuck buddy. Yeah. It definitely feels like a thing that exists because of Sex and the City.
Yeah, it does feel like Sex and the City sort of, I don't want to say they coined the term because it certainly doesn't feel like they did necessarily, but it does feel like perhaps started to gain traction around that time. So do you, I mean, did this show in any way affect you when it came to dating, as opposed to like when you were getting into relationships? Did you find yourself thinking about this show? Because there were other shows that obviously, I mean, listen, romance is a big part of most television shows, if we're being completely honest. So, you know, you still had Friends that was on the air at the same time. You still had like other shows that were dealing with that. But I feel like this show was so frank about it that I wonder if it made more of an impression on you than most.
Possibly. Yeah. I think like, it had such like, it had such an impact on the culture period. I think, you know, everybody now is like, oh, well, are you more of a Carrie? Are you more of a Samantha, Charlotte, Miranda? I tend to take the view that most women are all of them at some point, or like a mixture of all of them. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, some people are more pure one way or the other.
Sure,
but,
sure.
I mean, I think to some degree, listen, I live in New York City. It's impossible to date in New York City and not to like immediately think like, oh, my life is just like Sex and the City, even though it's not. There's no way anyone could live on East 73rd Street and write like one column a month for a paper. Not now.
In an amazing apartment too, for the most
part. In an amazing apartment, a brownstone apartment. Yeah. I mean, I think probably it affected me somewhat, but also, I have to be honest when I say that I haven't dated that many people, and I've done some casual dating and then, some not so casual dating, sure, which is where I am now. I'm in a serious relationship, but I think it's impossible at this point to date after 1999 and to not feel like that there's some part of you that's like, oh, this reminds me, and maybe you're a freak like me and you're like, oh, this reminds me of this like one episode where she did XYZ. Like I did actually have a guy break up with me via an email, which I did shut down immediately. I was like, no, you're gonna meet me in person and we're gonna hash this out, because I'm not. But I did immediately think, I was like, oh my god, it's like Burger and the Post-it. Yeah. It's the Post-it, and this guy thinks he can send me a long Post-it and break up with me. And I was like, no, we're not doing that.
So did you watch this episode with your boyfriend?
I did. Yeah, I did.
I'm curious as to what he thought of it.
Well, so it's interesting because I had asked him if he'd seen any of Sex and the City, and he's only seen the movie. He was like, I thought that would be a good entry point. I was like, that's so, like, it's not. So it's like he has an understanding of, he's very he loves pop culture. He watches everything. He's very curious about pop culture. So he did watch it, and he was like, wow, like, do women really talk to each other this way? And I was like, yes, we do. Not always to this extent. But also the first thing he said was like, oh my god, it's Liz Lemon's boyfriend, Dennis. Because
this is true. Dean Winters is in this episode.
Because Dean Winters is in this episode, and he's Carrie's fuck buddy. Mm-hmm. And so my boyfriend immediately is like, oh my god, it's Liz Lemon's boyfriend. And they're kind of like similar characters. So yeah, he really enjoyed it. I told him that really he should watch from like season 3 on, and it gets a little different, but, Yeah, he liked it.
I think that's interesting. I've been trying to get people. It's tricky because you want this when you're in a miniseries. You want people that can speak sort of in depth about the series. But I am also curious as to people who are just like watching one episode and just wondering like why was this such a big deal? But so just to give a brief synopsis of this episode for the people that haven't seen it, Carrie tries to make a relationship with her quote unquote fuck buddy happen. Miranda dates an abusive, condescending lawyer. Charlotte becomes a freewheeling dater and double books dates with two guys on the same night. And Samantha overhears the couple next door moaning and decides to outdo them. The Fuck Buddy aired on September 5th, 1999. It was written by Darren Star, directed by Alan Taylor, who would go on to direct many episodes of The Sopranos and the like. Vulture's ranking of this has it at number 87 of 96 episodes. They don't think particularly highly of this episode, unfortunately. But I do think that thematically, one of the great things about this show, I think, or at least covering this show, is how sort of brazenly they say their themes, right? Like Carrie literally says it as she's typing it into a computer.
Yeah.
Very Doogie Howser in that respect.
Yeah.
But so the theme of this episode is, you know, whether we're stuck in patterns and if we keep dating the same person over and over again and whether or not you can break those patterns. I think it's an interesting theme. I don't know that it's necessarily explored to the best of everybody's abilities, but it's an interesting theme. Some storylines work better than others. It also is interesting too. So, and I'm sure you know this, but to some of our listeners, maybe they don't, but you know, so Darren Star creates the show. He brings in obviously a bunch of writers, one of which is Michael Patrick King, who eventually takes over the show himself. But for these first sort of 2.5-3 seasons or so, Darren Star is a pretty significant voice in the show. That being said, this episode feels very reminiscent of season one. In a lot of ways, you've got Skipper coming back. This is the last time we see him. You got that nonsense of people talking on the street to the camera, which I don't know why anybody thought that was a good idea. So there's sort of a tonal shift, which at this point in the season, and I would say in the series, felt a little bit regressive, which is unfortunate. What did you think of, I want to sort of take each storyline, sort of take them out individually and kind of walk through them individually. We'll leave Carrie for the end because she's, you know, she's the protagonist. But I think that the Miranda storyline was the one that I thought was pretty upsetting. Miranda continues. She seems to be, if there's a character that's in abusive relationships the most, it's Miranda, which is somewhat depressing. Yeah. But this guy is such a raging asshole. She's dating this lawyer who's yells at her and is sort of belittling to her and to other people. And sort of the pattern being that Miranda needs to get out of these abusive relationships, which, I mean, obviously I agree with that. But I don't know. It was a strange way to go about it. What did you think of this storyline?
Yeah, you're right. Now that I'm thinking about it, Miranda really gets the short end of the stick with men on the show. She tends to date these like really aggressive, just icky men, except for Steve.
Yeah, Steve's the best. Yeah.
You know, and Steve is great, and he's so against type, which is, I think, why she's probably attracted to him in the first place, is it's just he's so opposite from everything. It's like, for me, I just can't figure out why she would be so attracted to him. Yeah. I do understand, I guess I understand the idea of like, you know, she's attracted to what happens in the sex, right? That she likes being told what to do. That's the only place she likes being ordered around, and that that makes sense for what I know about, you know, what people are like in the outside world versus what they tend to prefer inside the bedroom, psychologically, whatever. But it's not great. And you would think that somebody, Miranda really to me always seems like the most feminist on the show in a lot of ways. And so for her to be constantly stuck with guys like this over and over again, it's like, what's not clicking, sister?
Yeah, right? it's no, there's definitely a contradiction there to some degree, which by the way, I certainly wouldn't suggest isn't possible, because there's any number of sort of independently minded people that find themselves in sort of, I don't want to say submissive relationships, but being submissive to a person to some degree or another.
Yeah.
You know, it's so there is sort of that the contradiction of it that makes her human, which doesn't necessarily bother me. And you know, it's just there was one moment that really kind of irked me, which was about mid episode. She invites her friends to meet her boyfriend. I think his name's Kevin. And he shows up kind of barking orders at the waitress as he goes to make a phone call. And she puts a beer down that's a little full and it kind of spills over.
Yeah.
And then Miranda like grabs a napkin and like starts to clean it up. And Carrie's like, what are you doing? She's like, I just don't want him to go off on the waitress. That to me was just like, ugh, like that felt like real sort of, there's like, he's burrowed a fear into her. And that's not okay.
Yeah. It's one of those real red flags of like, you know, 9 times out of 10 verbal abuse turns into physical abuse. And so it's like, if she's doing this now, what's going to happen, you know, when that verbal abuse takes a turn? And luckily we never get to that point and she gets out of it. But yeah, it's like that's this one kind of like really dark moment in this episode that's just kind of like a throwaway. And it's almost like that's like the more interesting, and I guess interesting is not the word, that's like the bigger pattern that needs to be broken, that is not really it's sort of hinted at otherwise, where it's like, yeah, he's an asshole and she needs to like stand up for herself and leave him, which she does. But like,
thankfully, no, I mean, you definitely get the impression, especially sort of, you know, as the storyline comes to a close, basically Miranda spends the entire storyline telling her friends, like, don't worry. He's about to get promoted. And when he gets promoted, he's going to really chill out. I'm convinced that that's going to happen. He gets promoted and he's just as much of an asshole on the other side of his promotion as he was before. And that's when Miranda's like, fuck it, I'm saving myself and I'm getting the fuck out. And you know, and then there's this weird kind of tag on the end of it where it's like she's feeling really good about herself and she bumps into Skipper out in the street who is still like pissed off at her from when she dumped him. But she's feeling good about herself. And then the way he treats her makes her think that he's attractive again. It's the Skipper wedge into this episode feels completely superfluous to me. Like it gets us literally nothing, except for this little weird button on the end of Miranda's storyline to be like, oh, Miranda hasn't learned anything, which is weird. Like, it's all just sort of like, we didn't need this guy. Why did you shoehorn him into the episode, especially this deep in the series when we've long forgotten about this character? So it was odd, but I mean,
yeah.
You do it.
And Skipper wasn't ever really that interesting to begin with.
No.
And so, yeah, I don't really understand the bookending of Skipper on the episode. It's just, unless it's supposed to be like, oh, maybe she was the Kevin to him, like it doesn't make sense.
Well, it's funny you talk about Skipper, or we're sort of talking about Skipper, who's a character who, I mean, listen, I have been, I'm sure I will continue to be the friend to many women that don't see me as anything more than a friend, which is completely fine. And I think that there's the idea of the nice guy who's searching for all that sort of stuff. I think that's an interesting character. And I think that's an interesting character for Carrie to have in her life.
Yeah.
It's just the way they paint him, the way they write him, and quite frankly, the way they cast him as this kind of very nebbishy, sort of spineless, quite frankly, personality-less character, is just sort of, that's why he was phased out, because they just never figured out a way to make him interesting. My assumption is that he was going to be perhaps Miranda's endgame, which thankfully he wasn't, because Steve came into the equation. But like that idea of a character that sort of has to figure it out and figure out himself and get his spine and, you know, build him up to a place that he's worthy of Miranda, I could sort of see a version of that. I'm thankful that didn't happen, but like, I think that's what the goal was. But the other Miranda thing that I wanted to ask you about is an outfit that she's wearing in the park.
Yes, my boyfriend literally looked at me and he was like, what is she wearing? What is this? And
she's
wearing
a windbreaker.
Yeah.
That she puts the hood up and puts a hat over the hoodie part of it.
It's like probably in the list of like weird Sex and the City outfits. I'm like, I understand your ears being cold. I have worn some weird outfits in New York City on very cold days, but I don't know what this outfit is either. What was the purpose? Did she not she should have just worn one of those, like, I have one that's like the fleece thing that covers your ears. But it's like the hood, the windbreaker hood with the hat on top. So she looks like this, like, I think my boyfriend described her as like some kind of medieval cleric or something. He was like, why does she look like this? He was like, do women dress like this? No.
It's funny because what I immediately thought, and this is just me being like having been on shows before, my immediate thought was, because I've had actors that like don't like their hair on a certain day.
Yeah.
So they're like, can I wear a hat in this scene? And 99.9% of the time we're like, no, we're not. But like, it made me think like, did Cynthia Nixon just hate her hair that day and was like, fuck it, can I just put this hood and a hat over it or something? Because like, it just looks so crazy to me, but I really don't know what that was all about. But
yeah, it's so bizarre.
It's really bizarre. So in this scene, we have our Carrie and Co are at a park and they're talking about patterns. They're talking about, you know, breaking patterns. And then I don't know which one of them says. I think Miranda says to Charlotte, your pattern's very obvious. You're always wanting everything to be perfect and then it blows up in your face. And then I think it's Samantha that suggests Charlotte date a couple guys at once to take the pressure off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which leads us down her storyline, which is, it's a little light in the sense that I kind of wish that she got one more beat in the story, because it feels a little bit like, because she goes to yoga. There's a yoga scene where they're all talking about fuck buddies. And Charlotte's like, what's a fuck buddy? Because someone needs to explain it to her, I guess. Yeah. And then at that yoga class, she meets a guy and she asks him out, which I guess Charlotte's never asked out a guy before. And the look on her face is adorable, where she just feels like she's like, the world is her oyster now and anything's possible. So she asks this guy out, and then we don't really see Charlotte again until she goes on the date with this guy. And the storyline kind of really kind of wraps itself up a little bit too quickly in order for it to really kind of resonate. But what did you think of the idea of, and I guess the other question would be, have you ever dated more than one person at one time? I personally have not.
But. No, because I'm too much of a freak about dating one person at a time. I'm too much like, oh my God, I'm going to screw this up. No, this was the storyline that I turned to my boyfriend and I said, I was like, this causes me so much anxiety. I was like I felt when he and I first started dating, I went on like two dates in 1 week, one date with him, which was at the end of the week. And I went on a different date with someone else at the beginning of the week. And then, you know, things worked out, but like,
sure.
But even that was stressful enough to me because I was like, I feel like I'm betraying one person, you know, while I'm with this person, you know, it feels like a betrayal either way. So like the idea of not only dating two people at the same time, because I am unfortunately deeply monogamous. But like,
I don't know that that's an unfortunate thing.
No, but you know, it's like, yeah. I'm really not a casual dater, and that's God knows I've tried to be, and I'm just not. So,
sure.
But the idea of dating like two people at once, and not just two people at once, but literally two dates in the same night, makes me want to break out into hives. Yeah. It's so stressful, and especially the logistics of going on two dates in one night in New York City. It's like, well, you have to be a rich person to do this, because you'd have to take a cab to both dates, or you're doing them in the same neighborhood, which is risky.
I don't even like having multiple plans in an evening, like with because I already feel like I'm not really going to enjoy either of them because I'm going to be thinking about the other one the whole fucking time. Like, yeah. Anyway, that's just
well, and anymore. This is my only plan tonight because what are we doing now? Nothing.
Well, that, I mean, pandemic aside,
the pandemic aside. No, yeah, it's just deeply stressful, and it's also like it's such a. In my view, it's such a bad idea because then you really are shortchanging both people, but also yourself because Charlotte really does click with the first guy and she's really enjoying it. And that's what causes her to be late to the second date.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and if we're being real between these two guys as well, like one guy seems, you know, he seems like a nice guy. He seems pretty, you know, grounded. They chat a little bit about like old television shows and she asks about fucking kids on the first date, which is its own thing. But like they seem to have like they have a nice thing going, and then she realizes what time it is. She's like, oh fuck, I'm gonna be late for this other thing. So she just lies to him and says that she's sick, which comes out of nowhere, which anyone with a brain would be like, well, that's suspect. But she then says, I had a really good time, whatever. She then goes out with this other guy who's like this, I don't know, this like 6 foot tall. He looks like a linebacker. He's like works in stocks or some shit, like or business or whatever. And I'm just like, this guy seems far less interesting to me. This guy gets the kiss, however. This guy gets to like walk her to her door.
Yeah.
And then the other guy walks out and he had brought her chicken soup, which again, like nice guy, was concerned about her, whatever. And then both guys are like, this is fucked up. And they both decide to share a cab and take off, which is an understandable reaction, just to be clear. Like if I was a guy, and I mean, I'd be like, whatever. But it's also just sort of like, it's kind of a like shrug of an ending to the storyline a little bit. Like it doesn't, like, what does Charlotte learn from this? What does anybody learn from this? Like, what were we really doing? It was all kind of pointless.
It seems like she, you know, she's embarrassed. She's horrified. I think it just reiterates that, like, Samantha is not always the best person for her to get advice from because they are such opposites. And also, Samantha would have planned that completely differently.
100%.
But, yeah, I think it just reiterates that they're, like, they typify such different things that maybe Charlotte's like, oh god, like I can't ever do this again. And also that these two men are like, they are different, but the second one is so boring, like, you know.
It's interesting because ultimately I think that all of these storylines for the most part are interesting. They just don't dig particularly
deep. They don't they quite just kind
of
there.
They just kind of sit on the surface of like hijinksy, like they feel very kind of, you know what I mean, like they don't feel like they're actually like digging into the character really. And it's perhaps the most kind of the Samantha storyline is the one that feels the most kind of like you really got to twist yourself into pretzels for this one to fit theme, because it's just sort of like, so Samantha's overhears her neighbors having sex. So then she starts to masturbate while listening to them. Then like there's like a knock on the wall as like an acknowledgement of each other. Then she gets, it's insane. Then and she gets like a note from them saying like, hey, we'd love you to join us tonight.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And like, which all of this is insane. But like in a Samantha storyline, you're like, okay, I'll kind of buy it.
Yeah.
Then she goes to their house, knocks or their apartment, knocks on their door. They're an older Middle Eastern couple that she's not attracted to, which is a little mean. And then she's like, can you please keep it down? And then she like moves her bed away from the wall or whatever.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't really know how this fits on theme. I don't really know how this is about like patterns or breaking patterns. They try to like shoehorn this like wall metaphor into it, but like, I don't really, yeah. I'm just not buying it. It's not really working for me.
It's also like, I think a little cruel in that like, you know, I mean, because when she finally goes and knocks on the door, the couple does, she's assumed that they're this like,
hot, sexy couple.
But they are, because they're clearly having like really good sex. But they are this, what, they're from like Eastern Europe or I don't remember where they're from, but it's like, they would by all accounts be considered schlubby or something next to Samantha. And it's just kind of, you know, this is one of those parts of Sex and the City where I'm like, I feel like we've evolved past that enough where we can say like, you know, people are less shallow, I think, about that, where it's like, well, these people are having good sex, so like, why wouldn't you, you know, if that's your thing, why wouldn't you want to go join them? Because clearly something's going well over here that's got you turned on enough to actually consider taking the emperor off the
throne. Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like, so two things bump me about the storyline. So I'd like to unpack both of them with you. The first is what you're talking about here, which is you almost wish that this couple was like in their 70s or 80s or something, right? Like they're significantly older, not to be ageist, but like that was the thing that kind of made Samantha go like, okay, this isn't for me. Yeah. But it's that to your point, they're schlubbier. They're diverse. They're of a minority. Mm-hmm. So that her reaction of dragging her bed away from the wall, as though she's repulsed by what's transpired, is not okay with me. The second thing that bumped me, and it bumped me for two reasons. The first was the writer in me was like, why is there a janitor in the hallway, vacuuming the hallway that she just coincidentally bumps into and is like, hey, mister, do you know that couple?
Yeah.
And of course, this person is also, I mean, I want to say Mexican or some sort of, there's some kind of diverse component to this person. There's a language barrier at the very least. And he's like, yes, they seem nice. And you're just like, but what? Like, why do we need any of this? Like, you don't need this guy. Like, her knocking on the door and the reveal of the couple, whatever they might very well look like, that's the joke. I don't need the janitor character to, like,
It's the putting the hat on a hat, because you don't really need him to be like, oh, yeah, they're nice looking. Yeah, she's a dancer, he's a musician. So it's like building the joke, but the joke's already there, it's supposed to be funny. Yeah, it's supposed to be funny, but ultimately, like, rewatching this, I was like, but this is like not funny. Like if you want to have sex with them, go have sex with them, because like they're doing it for you, but it shouldn't be based on what they look like.
Like if you want, like, to me, it's like, the joke, and again, this is the shitty pitch, but like the joke is to just go farther with it. Like they're dressed up in costumes, or they're doing some sort of cosplay, or they're doing something, you know what I mean? Like something so absurd that, you know what I mean? That in theory, this janitor character could tee up as well. Like it's kind of there. It's just, they don't really land the joke. It comes across as kind of mean-spirited and a little racist. Like it all just doesn't really gel. Even though like the reveal and the joke, it's a total Samantha storyline in the fact that like there's something, Samantha's the only character on the show that would go knock on this couple's door and actually entertain the possibility of engaging in a threesome with them. So I understand why you go there. It's just, it doesn't necessarily, it just, this was not the way to execute the storyline.
Right. And I mean, we know that like Samantha can be shallow. We know that she is not always a nice person. She's a provocateur. She's going to do all of those kinds of things. But but it's kind of like, what was the lesson? Because I don't think she learned it.
Indeed.
It was just to move her bed away from the wall.
It was
feng shui.
It sexual kind of was. Feng shui. It's very strange. So our final storyline is Carrie's storyline, which is pretty, it's a pretty straight line. But you know, in these post sort of big episodes where, you know, she broke up with Big a few weeks ago, and now it's like she's sort of back in the dating scene, but at the same time, still feeling the emotional fallout of the breakup. So I appreciate that they're kind of like not giving her particularly substantive storylines, which is fine. Like, they're keeping it light because they know that at the end of the season, she's going to get this gut punch of Big being engaged and right. married or whatever it is. So this storyline for her essentially is she's also thinking about patterns. She's thinking about things, whatever. And she decides to kind of, I mean, it's essentially a booty call, yeah. Of her friend, John, played by Dean Winters, as we mentioned earlier. She invites him over for drinks at her place. But these drinks are kind of non-existent, and they both have post-sex plans. Like, he literally comes over, they know they're going to have sex, and then they're going to go their separate ways, and right. they're going to enjoy their evening, which is kind of funny. And in a somewhat unbelievable way, there is something humorous to it. I appreciate that they both have nothing to say to each other, that all they really have is sex. Their sort of post-coital pillow talk is mixed with a bunch of things that she doesn't remember and that right. he doesn't remember. And Carrie starts to wonder if John could be something more, since she always goes to him after breakups. So she tries to like turn her fuck buddy into a real relationship. You know, I wouldn't say that I've necessarily done anything this straightforward, but I certainly think that we've all had perhaps relationships or people that we have in our life that we weren't thinking could be someone, and then try them on and realize there's a reason why we never thought of that person that way.
Yeah, for Which sure. Feels, yeah, this is certainly, I think, relatable to me in that way. Because yeah, I think there's always like one, you always have like one or two people that you're like, well, you know, what if we seem to have a good rapport, things really work, but in a very limited aspect. And then, but I'm kind of the person that usually I know that there's probably a reason it's not working. And it's just because I'm like, oh no, I actually can't stand you for longer than this amount of time. But
sure.
But yeah, I think this one is probably the storyline that feels like the most, it's obviously the most on theme because it is the theme, but like, mm-hmm. It does feel like it's the most thought out in terms of, you know, who this guy is and those specifics of like, yeah, you know, when you're only seeing a person every however many months, you're bound to forget these little details. It's like they're right there, but you can't remember them. And he is a really good choice. I think Dean Winters is a good choice for this particular character because, and this is no offense to him, I think he just has the face and the demeanor of someone who I can very much believe is like an amiable guy that you're going to get a drink with and go sleep with, and you won't see him again for like mm-hmm. 6 months, 8 months, you know. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
He you know, it's funny because it does feel like Dean Winters, for all intents and purposes, has played variations of this character through most of his career.
He's very good at it. Yeah.
He is very good at it. The only thing I would take out of the equation is Oz, where he played a very different type of person. But I do think that like this 30 Rock and SVU all sort of, he falls into the category of nice, fit guy who is dumb mm-hmm. but funny. It's like, for instance, so then John goes over, he goes over to her house, goes over to Carrie's house. She asks him out to dinner. He goes there and he's like, yeah, dinner. He thinks it's just, again, like another ploy. But then when he tries to have sex with her, she's like, no, I made like reservations like to get sushi. And then there's like half-hearted weird like sushi sex joke that never lands there.
Yeah.
Where he makes some sort of it, and she's like, no, I mean actual dinner.
Right.
which is kind of strange. They go on this date. It's a terrible date because they have nothing in common. He works in like ad time or cell phone time or something like that. And she's bored and he's bored. And then they go back to her place to have sex to just kind of rid themselves of the notions of what happened on this date. The storyline ends with what I kind of love about the storyline is they're walking to her apartment at the end, and she's walking down this beautiful street that she lives on, like you said, that she would never be able to afford. And she's talking about the beauty of her street and how it makes her think of Edith Wharton and Henry James. And then he says that her tits look great in the dress that she's wearing.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, that's, I mean, that is, it's great. It made me laugh, but yeah, you're like, these two are just not meant to be together, and that's fine.
Right, and it's, you know, it's because, like, also Liz Lemon would say stuff, and he would have no idea what she's saying. Yeah, and the Carrie story is relatable to me, because I just remembered that, I don't know, God, it was probably, like, 8 years ago or something, I had a date with a guy, and we went and got sushi, and it was, like, the most boring conversation, and, like, his brother, he was telling about how his brother, like, managed a CVS or something, and I had to pretend to be interested in this. So this whole time that you're talking about this, I was like, oh, my God. Right. Yeah. I have been on that date. It did not – it all it ended with was a goodbye. We didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. I think we've all been on the date where you're just like, listen, this person's nice. I have nothing against this person, but I can't spend much more time with this person.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, let me just pull this conversation out. And well, granted, I'll talk to anyone, but
But it's so the last scene, basically they have this moment where Carrie's like, I'd invite you up, but, and he's like, no, I got to be up early. And they both kind of acknowledge. What I like about it too is that, like, and this is sort of, this is where Sex and the City excels, which is that, you know, in a world, in a television landscape where you had Seinfeld and Friends and Frasier and all these shows on at the time, all these big hit broadcast television shows, they very infrequently would have a moment where, like at the end of this episode, where John and Carrie look at each other and there's a silent acknowledgement that this is the last time they're going to see each other. There's kind of this, I don't want to say a wistful or sadness to it, but like there's something there where the show acknowledges that there's a depth here and there's a moment here. And then Carrie goes into her apartment and that's the end.
Right.
Most of these other sitcoms that are on at the time, they're just not going to go there, right? Like there's no reason for them to, for the most part. They're joke machines. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but like this show, and it's the reason that I think that this show continues to hold up, even if we've just spent, you know, 45 minutes talking about some of the things that didn't work.
Right.
By and large, this show, you know, it went there. It took those risks to allow these characters to seem messy and broken and flailing about in love. I think that that's why it's special.
Yeah, I agree that I think when it gets it right, it like really gets it right, and for all of its, you know, foibles, I think looking at it from a 2021 lens now, where we're just way more evolved on a lot of issues, you know, for all of these foibles, I think like when the show gets it right, it really gets it right, and it does often have a lot of bittersweet moments that ring very true and do feel really earned. Those tend to be given to Carrie, of course. But you know, I think Miranda gets a lot of those because she really has such a rough road for a long time. Yeah, I mean, but it does, right? It goes there. It dares to go there.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I think that it, I mean, one of the things that I think, again, one of the many reasons why I think the show has stood the test of time to some degree or another, putting aside, you know, as you said, many things that we've progressed on. I mean, this show pushed the ball down the field in ways that many shows hadn't up until that time. So at the time, this show was quite progressive. Obviously, we've changed, we've matured to some degree. We did elect Donald Trump, so there's that.
Right.
But we have, you know, but it is interesting to your point, you know, Carrie gets most of those bittersweet moments, right? Carrie's the protagonist. She's going to get most of them. But I do think that each character does get an opportunity. I mean, Charlotte has a significant growth as a character. When you see where she starts from and where she ends, it's really interesting. I'd say that Samantha has a real growth. They throw that away in the movies for the most part, but they do have, you know, she does end in a place where she's, you know, looking at her mortality and dealing with, you know, dealing with breast cancer and dealing with things that are heavy issues, obviously, and important issues. So it is a show that slowly but surely went there. And I think that's why, you know, one of the reasons why I think it's special. I think that, you know, in an episode called The Fuck Buddy, they don't really necessarily go to the depths that they do deeper in series. But to end on such a bittersweet moment, like you just mentioned, shows that, like, it always wants to try something. It always wants to go a little bit, you know, a little farther than the show would otherwise.
Yeah, for sure.
So I have been asking all of my guests who their favorite character on Sex and the City is and why. So, Emmy, it is your turn to answer that question.
Well, I've been thinking about this because it's hard for me. There's I like a lot of these, like, incidental characters that pop up. You know, I like John Slattery's politician that wants Carrie to pee on him. That's mostly because I just love John Slattery in anything, anytime.
Speaking of John Slattery, since you brought him up, did you think that Carrie destroying his political career was a somewhat overreaction?
Sure. Like, I mean, it's like kink shaming him by literally destroying his chances to set off is like, that's a little, it's a little far. No, I mean, I think one character that I always loved when she would pop up is, I love Candace Bergen's
she's great.
Vogue editor. I like her journey whenever she appears. I like that she, like, dates Wallace Shawn at one point.
And ends, like, up with Wallace Shawn.
Yeah, and you know, she's just a lot of fun. So that, and of course I love, you know, when there's the party and Kristen Johnson falls out the window. I mean, if I really had to pick a favorite, I love her.
She's the best.
Dearly. Yep.
What happened to Fun?
What happened to Fun? And then she falls out the window. I mean, if ever there was a great, like, a greatest moment on the show, I think that's probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen on TV. It's because Kristen Johnson is perfect. You know,
I mean, Candace Bergen is tremendous, and has been basically her entire career. I don't know if you've watched Let Them All Talk yet, the Soderbergh.
No, I haven't gotten to it yet.
You should watch it. It's really, really good, and she's tremendous in it. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, at the beginning, before we get on mic, as I did obviously with you, I say, you know, at the end of the episode, I'm going to ask you what your favorite character is. And I preface it by saying, like, you can pick one of the four leads if you want, but, like, the bench is so deep on this show.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, like, that's what I love about it is, you know, we've done 14 episodes so far, and each week someone's picking someone new and some sort of new little, I mean, no one's talked about Candace Bergen yet, who is a standout on the show. This comes back to sort of, you know, the legacy of this show, right? Like, it's what it leaves behind is, you know, Justin Theroux showing up twice as two different people. You know,
so it's Law and Order, I think, in that way, where it's like, you know, a lot of it's all these great New York actors that just they show up, you know, they've done every possible spinoff of Law and Order, and then they all were on Sex and the City. And it's like so much fun to rewatch these episodes and be like, oh my God, it's Justin Theroux. And then you know, like,
it's Timothy Oliphant.
It's wild.
It's whoever. It's really fun, you know,
Bradley Cooper.
And then there was, like, Bradley Cooper in his first role. And by the way, great in it, but I mean, like, it is a great show in the people that sort of pop up in roles that you wouldn't expect them to. I mean, Heather Graham showing up as Heather Graham, but still, like, people that just pop up here and there. It's a really fun show, and it's a really fun universe. And, you know, I talked about this, I don't remember what episode it was, and I need to hear your thoughts on this as well, but with the revival looming, and the potential of maybe even seeing it by the end of this year. You know, I've talked about the Carrie Diaries a little bit, which I really thought was a sweet show, even if if it's probably not canonical, because it breaks all sorts of rules of backstory and what have you, but that's neither here nor there. I thought it was a really sweet show. I thought it was really well cast. And I keep coming back in my head thinking, like, there is a Carrie universe. There's a Sex and the City universe that could very well be sort of turned into other spinoffs and other things if they choose to do that, if HBO Max and the powers that be decide to go there, for this exact reason. I mean, I would watch a show about Candace Bergen's character. I would watch a show about, I mean, and when I say a show, I mean 6-8 episodes, you know, whatever the case might be, a limited, but like there's ways to do stuff with this bench that I hope that they do. And I hope that it doesn't just feel like a cash grab. But what are your thoughts on this revival that's coming our way?
Well, you couldn't tell
from the sigh that Emmy just gave.
I don't really think it's necessary. I think I don't know. I mean, I think that there are obviously so many stories to tell about women over the age of 50, and we need to be telling them. And that's why I'm always like, listen, Book Club is not a great movie, but will I watch Book Club multiple times for the deranged Photoshop? Yes, I will. And for Candace Bergen? Yes, I will. But like, I don't know that it's necessary. I feel like we have told so many of these stories, especially after the two movies, the second of which I have not seen all the way through. I always wind up seeing like part of it on TV, and it's like always the same part, and I never quite make it past that. I'm in it for Liza Minnelli. I love it. But it's like, I don't need it. The first movie was fine. You know, like, I'm always happy to see these actresses. I don't know how they're going to do a show without Samantha unless they, like, kill her off. Because she is, like, the sex of Sex and the City. And it's also, it's, you know, I think, again, in, like, 2021, do we need these, like, predominantly wealthy white women on our TV screens every week when there are so many other kinds of stories that HBO has started to, you know, to tell, when you have people like Issa Rae and Michaela Cole? I mean, it's like, I don't, you know, on one hand, like, I see the value, and I think we need to continue telling stories about women who no longer are 25 and gorgeous, but like, on the other, I don't know if we need it, but I might watch it.
Oh, you're 100% going to watch it.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it, unfortunately.
I mean, my feeling on it, ultimately is I agree. We don't need this for sure. I would say that I would be slightly disappointed if the last time I saw these characters was in the second movie, because I have issues with the second movie. You know, the idea that the last time we see Samantha is in a film where she says the line, "Lawrence of my labia."
Oh my god! Like, yeah, no, we don't need that.
I would love for them to do their you know, I've said this on previous episodes, so I apologize for repeating it to our listeners, but I'll just say quickly that I feel like the strength of this show was in 22, 25 minute segments. And it was intimate, and it was small stories, and they were quick bites. And that's why the show is so addictive and easy to binge.
Yeah.
It just works really well in that setting. And when you give them $150, $200 million and you blow the scope open and you blow the production open, all of a sudden you start to realize, like, wait, what exactly am I watching now? Like, what exactly is this show really, or are these movies really about? So I am excited, perhaps stupidly, but I'm excited to see them get back to the small screen to tell us these smaller stories, hopefully to get to a place where hopefully they explore what you were talking about earlier about getting older, what it means to be a, you know, a woman in your 50s, and you know, could the vacuum of Samantha actually be a good story engine, and whether or not that could create stories, as you know, possibly, who knows. I'm trying to be cautiously optimistic, even though I'm pretty convinced that it's probably going to be an opportunity to get more people to watch HBO Max, and that it's, you know, so there is that. But again, I'm going to just try to stay open-minded about it, right. But I agree with you. We don't necessarily need it.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like the Downton Abbey movie. Like, I love Downton Abbey. And I loved seeing what they could do with a lot more money and how they opened things up. But also it's like, was any of this necessary? No. What works so well about it is that you're getting these like 50-minute episodes, and you're getting there. It's essentially, you know, just like a high soap opera. And that's what I want to, you know, that's what I want to watch. Will I watch more Downton Abbey movies? Yeah, because, you know, it's gentle drama. Say, that's what I want, you know.
I will watch more Sex in the City. My roommate is obsessed with Downton Abbey as well. And she said that the movie was quite good.
Yeah, like I enjoyed it.
You know, so, you know.
It had just enough stakes to feel like, yes, we could tell this on a big screen. Also, we could have told it on a small screen, on a special
the
movie
Queen's
on PBS.
The Queen's coming to dinner. What are we going to do? The Queen's coming to dinner.
What are we going to do? That's the big issue, is the Queen is coming to a dinner. You know, but I mean, I think, yeah, I like, look, I think Sex in the City could, if they dare to go there, I think they could really do some interesting things with these women. As I think Bridget Jones attempted to do with, especially with their third sequel with Bridget Jones's Baby, which I actually liked quite a bit. And I thought they really matured the character in very smart ways. And I think that there is an opportunity to do that with these women. I think, yeah, I'm sighing a lot because it's also because it's Darren Star, and he will always go for a Lawrence of Arabia joke.
Versus, it's not Darren Star. It is Michael Patrick King. So Darren Star is busy doing Emily in Paris. So
and
Darren Star has
younger.
Has and you know, probably younger. So I mean, and again, listen, it's very, very hard when you're working on a television show that people love, because you just want desperately to keep people loving those characters. Right. And yet at the same time, as a writer, on some level, you're just like, but I just don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over again. So you take swings, and sometimes those connect and sometimes they don't. And I don't necessarily begrudge that Michael Patrick King wanted to make the second movie about what he wanted to make it about. Sure. I just think that ultimately, you know, it was just too overproduced for my liking, and there was just, I had issues with it. But, you know, I think that I'm curious to see what this looks like. I'm very curious to see if they decide to try to say something with Samantha's absence, or if they just try to sweep it under the rug and just it's a throwaway line. If it's a throwaway line, I think that's leaving money on the table and that's a wasted opportunity. But, you know, we'll see what they
do. Right. I mean, and if worse comes to worse, my suggestion is that they somehow bring in the two women from AbFab in the UK, and they can fill the Samantha hole in the show, and you just have Eddie and Patsy run around. You know, I'm here for chaos. I want chaos.
Apparently, you're the Joker of the Sex and the City franchise.
I guess so. You know.
Well, Emmy, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this episode, to talk about the Fuck Buddy and to talk about Sex and the City. I really appreciate it, and I hope that you'll come back in the future.
Yeah, we'd love to.
One last thing, please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989, Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hanna, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeits1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Also, please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits. Thank you to Ernie and Will for producing our episodes, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our artwork and theme songs, and most of all, thank you all for listening. Podcast like it's 1999.
99. Podcast Like It.
You want a podcast like it?
1999.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.